That's Luke Doucette, and let's hope he's not not brokenhearted anymore. Are you okay now, Luke?
Yes, I think I'll survive.
Your heart isn't so broken.
No, it's not.
That's
completely
good.
Mended.
The last time you were here on the show was a couple of years ago, and you were already playing a bunch of the songs that eventually grew into this record. And you were talking about sort of the breakup that inspired a lot of it, and you were talking about doing a breakup record. How far is that record that we sort of envisioned 2 years ago to the one that we actually hold in our hands right now?
I think, the core body of work is, like you, as you say, it's been around.
Luke? We're losing you all of a sudden, Luke. I don't know if you can hear me, but...
We
suddenly can't hear you.
I hear you.
Almost at all.
Hear me?
You're fading in occasionally, but for the most part, no. Which is...
How about now?
That's a little bit better.
A little bit better?
Yeah.
I'm still here.
Yeah. Sometimes these things just have no way of... We can't predict how well these cell phones are going to work, so... All right, let's try that again. Sorry, what were you saying about... is this essentially the same record that you planned originally?
And it didn't from the beginning of the process. But, of course, when you're in the studio, you know, things take on a different shape, and it was really enjoying music at the time.
I got to be honest with you, Luke. We're not doing very well at the moment. You're not sounding entirely like yourself. You kind of sound like a robot that talks occasionally. So, not really sure what to tell you here, Luke. But and I don't even know if you can hear me, to be honest with you, because I can't hear you. So,
consider that it's radio. You still don't get anything.
All right. There's a short song on your record, I think. Let's play "Stumbling Gingerly Back to Emily's Apartment." I'm gonna converse with Luke. We'll be right back. All right, Luke, a good showman such as yourself has got to be prepared for the unexpected, got a plan for contingencies, got to be able to roll with the punches. So we've switched phones. How are we sounding?
I can't fucking hear a thing.
Hello?
Hello.
Luke? Yeah? Do we sound okay?
Yes, I'm just trying to figure out. I'm talking on somebody's BlackBerry, which is kind of like holding a Commodore 64 up to your head.
That new technology, eh? You'd think they'd make it smaller.
Yeah.
All right, so the road seems to be your home these days, Luke. You're headed out. You're still, I guess, you're on now the Exclaim tour.
Yeah, that's right.
And live has always sort of been your strength for me. Whenever I've seen you live, I've felt that that's where you were at your best. This record, I think, is a lot closer to the magic that you capture on stage. Hmm. Was that sort of a purposeful thing to make this sound more like sort of what you do live, or?
No. Not really. I mean, I think I'm playing more of these songs live, and they're easier to duplicate, which might make it seem like the album is closer to what my live show might be. I think it's more just that this album is easier to play live.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't feel the need to make as many changes, whereas when some of the other recordings I've done in the studio is one thing, and then live, you know, things have to become quite different. So,
right.
I mean, you know, obviously I'm always... I like the feeling of playing live, and I like that experience, and I like to try and capture some of that kind of immediacy on a record, but it's not always possible.
Right. It seems like you've been playing, I don't know, whenever I see you, I feel like you must have been born with a guitar in your hand. Is music, like, performing and playing music, has that been a part of your life since you were a kid, or?
Not really. I think it's pretty, you know, my history that way is fairly typical. I started playing when I was a teenager, when I was 13 or so.
Oh, yeah.
I just worked a lot. I just worked, you know, really hard at it. I spent a lot of time, a lot of hours, countless hours working on it. It was, I mean, I'd like to say that it was just the family sitting around the campfire back in the old country playing, you know, folk songs that had been passed down through generations, but that would be a lie.
Not quite like that, hey?
Nope.
I had the good fortune of seeing you this summer at the Hillside Festival in Guelph.
All right.
And you had a very special guest who joined you on stage. And, you know, sometimes when people, not that I've ever seen it before, but there's a threat that if you bring your kid up on stage, you know, it's just going to be some cute little element of your show. So you brought up your daughter, and nobody really knows how this is going to go. The kid gets up there and just about upstages you. She's incredible.
Yep. Yep.
Like,
she's pretty amazing.
Obviously, music is a part of her life from an early age, though.
Well, okay, yes. Now, I mean, in her case, I mean, I shouldn't say that music wasn't a part of my life from an early age. My parents were really musical. My father is a guitar player, but he wasn't living with me until I was, and he was, he never lived with me after I was two and a half years old.
Right.
So, you know, but then when I was a teenager, he and I played a lot of music together. We had a band together. You know, we did a lot of gigs together, and we listened to music together and stuff. So that, you know, that it was in my family in that regard. And also, my mother is a very musical person, and there were a lot of the records that I still listen to the most are records that I've been listening to since I was 6 months old or 2 days old, because
right.
There are a lot of albums that were released in the early 70s that my parents were listening to: J.J. Cale and Randy Newman and Tom Waits and, you know, Paul Simon and Stevie Wonder and people like that. So that was the music around the house. As far as Chloe's concerned, I mean, I'm a lot more active in her life than my father was in mine, because
right.
I'm an active parent to her, and music is a big part of my life. And so she comes out on the road and she sees that, and she takes, you know, she's got her piano lessons and she does violin and all these sorts of things. So she has a very active musical life. I didn't actually get my hands on an instrument in any really concrete way until I was a teenager, although I was a choir boy when I was, you know, seven,
right.
8 years old. I sang in the choir.
Now, as a guy who's been around the music industry for a long time, and I'm sure you've seen the bad side of the music industry, are you a little bit nervous about your kid displaying such an aptitude and a willingness to participate in music at such an early age? Do you ever try to talk her out of it?
I've never tried to talk her out of it, but I would certainly want to make sure she's realistic and has a realistic idea about what the music industry is like. You know, my feeling about the music industry, if you're not a fan of it, and if you don't want it to chew you up and spit you out, then you have to basically be prepared to avoid taking a gamble that the music industry can be.
Right.
You know, like, I think a lot of people, they think, well, I have a little bit of talent, so I'll throw my hat into the ring, and then it's basically like winning the lottery.
Right.
You can avoid that. You just have to have a blue-collar approach to playing. You have to make sure you can always have a gig.
Right.
And you can always get a gig. And that just means practicing your instrument and, you know, being able to think of it as a working-class trade as opposed to simply or exclusively an artistic endeavor, because it can be both.
Right. You started out and for many years played in bands and backed people up and did all kinds of other things, but now it seems like the focus is more on being a solo performer. Is that sort of where your career is definitely focused at this point in time? I know you've been involved with so many things even recently, but are you now going to become Luc Doucette full time?
Well, I've always been Luke Doucette full time.
Yeah.
It's just now, you know, I'm not. I understand your question, and yeah. I think yes, the answer is yes. I am going to try and focus on that, but at the same time, you know, even regardless of how well or how poorly this whole campaign goes, you know, in terms of a careerist thing, like I don't know whether I become a rock star or not, doesn't change the fact that I will always want to work on people's records and work on their music with them outside of my own stuff. I think that's a really valuable part of the whole experience for me. Like when I work on records. Fortunately, now most of the music that I work on outside of my own stuff is music that I really love. Like I haven't found myself in situations where I'm dedicating a large amount of time and energy to something that I didn't think was valid musically.
Right.
And you know, there was a time not long ago in my life when that was fairly regular for me, where I was jumping from one gig to the next. Anything that would pay me
right.
enough money to pay my rent, I would do. And now, you know, whether I'm producing records for NQ Arbuckle or Melissa McClelland, or whether I'm playing guitar with O Susanna, or you know, or with Blue Rodeo or Sarah McLachlan, I mean, those are all situations that I can derive a certain amount of satisfaction from artistically, as well as whatever else I'm getting out of it.
Right. Obviously, you have a lot of experience to bring to the table. When you go to work with somebody or produce somebody, what are you trying to put in of yourself, or what is your job to do?
What's my job? Well, it really depends. I mean, I guess my job is to interpret their needs as much as possible, their
right.
musical needs, and try and make myself as valuable as I can, you know, make myself as useful to them, you know, so that I'm an asset and not a liability, because you can fill a studio or a stage full of able-bodied and minded people who won't necessarily contribute positively to the experience because they're too, you know, for whatever host of reasons, there are a whole bunch of reasons. So yeah, I mean, for me, my objective is do what I can do to make them feel like their music is being represented in the best possible way.
Right.
Yeah.
And when you put together a record of your own, are you would you say you're a control freak, or do a lot of people have a say in how it sounds later on?
No, nobody has a say in. I mean, right now the way I've been making my own records, I do it completely myself.
Yeah.
I mean, I invite people to participate because I like what they have to offer. I don't necessarily bring them into the studio because I want them to take. I mean, everybody needs to take direction, but. I choose musicians because I like the choices that they make.
Right.
And I want them to make choices.
But they're still a part of your... They're still a part of your vision, though, for the project, obviously.
Yeah, and if I don't like the choices they make, then they're no longer part of my vision and they find somebody else.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But I want people to make choices. That's really important to me. I think the sound of people making choices is a really compelling choice.
Right.
Yeah.
This new record, it does seem like there's more players on it. It seems more produced and more full than perhaps Aloha Manitoba was.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot more. You know, the number of musicians and the number of people involved has a lot more to do with the fact that I made this record piecemeal. Like, I worked on it in different parts of the country and continent at different times because I was on the road.
Right.
So, you know, if I had 6 weeks solid time, I probably would have just picked a core, you know, a core band, and then a few cameos by people who I wanted to bring in, and then made the whole record in one sitting.
Right.
And you know, the liner notes would have been 5 or 6 lines of text, and that's it. And as it stands, you know, there's 10 studios,
yeah.
and, you know, 14 engineers, because I had to piece things together in Los Angeles and in New York and Calgary and Toronto and wherever else I happened to be at those times. So,
why is the record broken into two pieces, side one and side two? What's the difference between the two?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
Well,
that.
The record is, it says side one, and then there's 8
oh,
songs, and then there's you know, some more songs on side two. What is the difference between the two? Why is there a visual anyway break between the two?
Well, when I sequenced the record, it made sense that there was an interlude in the middle.
Right.
And that's why at the beginning of side two, there's the sound of, it sounds almost like an orchestra tuning up. just before. It's not the liquor I miss.
Yeah.
I really wanted to sort of drive home the point that you know, if one were to listen to side A, so to speak, and then, you know, have a pee break and come back,
yeah.
and listen to side two, that would sound like an appropriate way to hear this album. I mean, I think this record is an entity. Like it's like a novel with chapters, as opposed to 12 or 13 separate pieces of music. I think of it as an entity. I think I wish it was on vinyl, so that it could really be two separate sides. Because, you know,
yeah.
with vinyl, sometimes you choose to listen to side B. I think,
yeah.
you know, occasionally people will put a CD on their CD player and they'll skip ahead to track 7 and listen from track 7 to the end. But not as often as you might listen to side B of a cassette or
right.
or an album. And I think, you know, that was the charming part of listening to music back in the days when
yeah.
that's how the format was presented.
I'm glad that you referred to it that way, because especially that song, which I want to play soon, is It's Not the Liquor I Miss. It really takes me back to a 70s kind of a sound. I mean, that had to be sort of a purposeful thing with the strings and the just the way it's built. It just reminds me of great sort of 70s radio.
I think what I wanted to... I mean, the reason I accessed that particular era in music is because, you know, it is light and it's fun, and I wanted to juxtapose some of the darkness of the lyrical content with a sense of sort of something a little bit more spiritually uplifting. And I use the term spiritually loosely.
Right.
I don't mean in any kind of religious way. I just mean I want the record to have a... I wanted it to sound somewhat optimistic and positive, because, you know, my own personal life and the darkness that might have existed in it at one particular time when I wrote a lot of these songs, I don't necessarily, you know, I wouldn't want to suggest that I think anybody needs to suffer through 45 minutes of me whining. And I think, you know, making the album, giving it a sense of positivity was the responsibility of the music as opposed to the
right.
lyrics.
Right.
And I think that paradox, that juxtaposition was deliberate, definitely. And there's a few other songs. It's Not the Liquor I Miss. This, you know, the 70s sounding sort of Love Boat theme song, string section thing, and the saxophones. I mean, I was thinking about some of what John Lennon and David Bowie were up to in that era.
Right.
And I like that sound. I mean, I think it's worth bringing it back. The sort of piano ballad with string section and a saxophone solo. I mean, I know people are probably cringing right now. But, you know, maybe hopefully the song will speak for itself in terms of whether that is legitimate or not.
Oh, absolutely. But do people ever kind of clue on, like, you've got your wonderful, charming, hopeful little daughter and the beautiful and talented Melissa McClelland adding these very bright and happy backup vocals to a song that's kind of, yeah, but some of the misery of your life, perhaps. Does anybody kind of ask you about that irony, or is it sort of...
Oh, yeah. You know, I think people ask me about that irony. I think they ask me in a kind of cross-examining kind of way. I think people are mistrustful. Sorry, hang on.
No problem.
People are mistrustful of me because... I don't know why. Maybe because I look younger than I am, or because I'm small, or because I'm a waspy kid, or whatever, from a middle class. But they perceive to be a middle class background, and I feel like I get challenged a lot on the legitimacy of some of the storytelling.
Right.
You know, I suppose that's fine. Although, you know, if people were to spend a half an hour in the house I grew up in and watch the people come and go who come into our home and sit at the dinner table and smoke cigarettes and talk to my mom, you'd realize pretty quickly that I don't have to make any of this stuff up. Like,
right.
the stories I'm telling, 95% of them are things that I've either experienced myself or that I've witnessed firsthand in my brothers and sisters and parents and lovers. And, you know, truth is stranger than fiction, and that's a pretty tired cliche. But, like I say, if you spent a half an hour sitting at my mom's kitchen table, you'd see pretty quickly that I don't have to... It's not much of a stretch for me to
right.
tell these stories.
Are you in Winnipeg for long? Do you get a chance to visit with your family while you're here, or is it just kind of an in and out kind of thing this time?
It's pretty fast.
Yeah.
It's gonna. I mean, we have a lot of driving, and the way this tour is routed, it's unfortunately I'm not gonna have much time. Although on the way back, I have to deadhead from Edmonton to Toronto. I think I'm gonna stop for maybe 16 hours or 12 hours anyway.
Yeah.
In Winnipeg, and then I'll be back in December for the holidays.
Oh, great. Are you playing solo this time, or you got the band with you?
Oh, no, I've got the band. I've got Paul Brennan and Rich Levesque and Melissa McClelland all in the band.
That's terrific. Just I'm a fan. When does Melissa's record coming out? I know you worked on that, her new record as well?
Her new record will come out in February, we think. I guess we're some of those plans have yet to be solidified, but yeah.
Excellent.
All things going as they should. February, and it's a fantastic. It's a really, really beautiful record. I'm really excited for
her.
I'm really happy about it. It's wonderful. It's probably the best thing I've ever worked on. I'm really happy with it.
That's terrific. Well, I can't wait to hear it, and can't wait to see you on Wednesday for the Exclaim tour. We're gonna play "It's Not the Liquor I Miss." And thanks, Luke. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show, sir.
And sorry the technology made it difficult, but I appreciate your
no
patience.
No problem. We struggled through, and it sounded fine in the end. So that's all that matters.
Right on.
All right. Have a safe trip.
Thanks a lot.